polling takes place between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. But that's a clue.
Good morning, everyone. Whoa. Excuse me. Let's try that again. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. I assure you, I am a nearly 35-year-old man, not a 12-year-old child going through puberty. My voice cracked for no apparent reason right there, but you know what? We're off to a rock and a rolling start here on FPC Radio Live because we got a lot to talk about, and a variety of different topics spanning pretty much every sport. So we're not going to waste too much more time. I'm just going to bring in the guy himself. You see his name up on the screen. He is John Sapicetti. John, good morning. Did you stay up and watch that game last night?
I watched every game last night. I watched the Red Sox, the Colts and Ravens. And, of course, I'm a San Francisco Giants fan, so that kept me up till about 12:30. And it was a nice win by the Giants, 1-0 to go up 2-1 against the Dodgers. So, yeah, I'm on very little sleep, but I'm happy, you know, because my Giants won, the Red Sox won. I put out my picks, you know, my NFL picks, and I had the Colts plus 7.5, so they covered. But, fun night of sports, but it was kind of overshadowed by a certain boob who, dominated the sports news.
Yeah, look, I mean, heading into this week, certainly I don't think any of us would have anticipated, for a number of reasons, this was going to be John Gruden's last game as Raiders head coach, just 3.5 years into a 10-year deal. But the events that have transpired over the course of the last week have certainly warranted his departure, and he resigned yesterday, shortly after more documents and emails information was released about the contents of those emails and the exchanges he had with Washington president at the time, Bruce Allen. And we had a brief conversation off air about kind of the initial response and thinking, okay, if this is a one-off thing, okay, it's inexcusable. There's a lot of things wrong, but the revelation of what came out yesterday, just piling on what was already a terrible thing for him to have said. I don't want people to forget that the initial email, the single email that started all of this, was egregious. It was terrible. Mm-hmm. This just, I mean, we were joking, you know, not joking, but kind of ha-ha joking right before we got on the air. I mean, he hit the cycle for offending people. I mean, he was racist. He was misogynist. He was homophobic. I mean, it's almost impressive in a way, like how you can do this. It just hit like every single just thing. Like, I don't know. I mean, the content in which that came out, It's baffling because the crazy thing about all this, John, is the people that were defending him and the image in front of the camera that we all know. Because I think we all know or figured from watching him on camera, okay, yeah, John Gruden's a bit of a hard ass. He's kind of a showman. You know, he's gonna show himself up. But I don't think we ever, any one of us in the public, looked at him and said, oh yeah, this is a guy that, you know, behind the scenes is just saying some egregious things to not just friends, but, you know, executives in the NFL, leaders of other teams. So, you know, it just opens up this whole can of worms that, like, okay, so if this was being tolerated at this level, a high-ranking, you know, Super Bowl-winning coach, at the time he was a member of the ESPN Monday Night Football crew, but he was still has a lot of cachet in the NFL, communicating with a president of one of the most valuable franchises in the NFL, based in the nation's capital, or, you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. To think that this was the only occurrence of this type of discussion among leaders in this business would be naive. And I think that's the biggest thing that comes out of this. So, yes, you know, John Gruden is is certainly getting what he deserved. But the worst part about this is, I feel like it's only scratching the surface. Because remember, this came out of an investigation into the Washington football team, not into John Gruden. This is an investigation going on about workplace discrimination and everything in Washington. And it just so happened that these emails were picked up. So I don't think this is the end of this. And this is just not a good look, obviously, for Gruden, but for a lot of people involved, both sending and reading these emails.
There's in excess of 35,000 emails. So obviously, they're going to comb through these, and mm-hmm. it's not just going to be John Gruden. It's going to be other coaches, executives who think the same way as John Gruden. And look, it's the old boys network, right? We've seen what owners have said in private, and then it got out in public, talking about they have kind of like a slave master's mentality, right? Mm-hmm. So whether it be McNair in Houston or Richardson with Carolina, he was forced to sell the team or decided to sell the team. We kind of see that with a lot of the owners. Jerry Jones has been caught saying kind of crazy things as well. I don't think it's just John Gruden, but I've never been a big fan of John Gruden, and I'm not piling on today. I think he's a wildly overrated coach. I never really liked him as a broadcaster. I kind of put him into the same vein as Tony Romo, where mm-hmm. there's just a lot of, nonsense and a lot of style over substance. Like, I don't learn much from John Gruden when he was doing the games on Monday Night Football. I don't think he's that good a coach. He stepped into a great situation in Tampa, and then after that, they never contended again. It's just weird, though, because it's coming from the Raiders, who are the most progressive organization in the NFL. Mm-hmm. They were under Al Davis. They remain that way under Mark Davis. This is an organization that was at the forefront of being progressive and being inclusive,
pioneers,
right?
Pioneers. And pioneers. In every sense of the word,
every
not
step.
Racial, not, yep. not just racial, no. but for women, for yeah. Obviously Hispanics
exactly.
with Tom Flores. So yep. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. You do the Eye Test podcast with Clark Judge and you've had former Raiders on. I mean,
including
they speak glowingly, including Tom Flores.
And Amy Trask.
Deservedly. Yeah, exactly. Flores speaks glowingly, I'm sure, of Al Davis. I mean, it probably wasn't the easiest guy to work for, but he was way ahead of his time. I mean, Art Shell, the first black head coach in NFL history. I mean, Al Davis was way ahead of his time. Al Davis was very close with Red Auerbach, mm-hmm. and Red Auerbach was that guy in the NBA. The three organizations you look at in professional sports that were just miles ahead of everyone, the Raiders in football, the Celtics in basketball, and the Dodgers in baseball, they just were mm-hmm. much more progressive. And again, when you use the word progressive, the people on the right get all offended, but that's what it was. They were looking for progress, and that's what those three organizations were there. So here's John Gruden, who, mm-hmm. Is mostly associated with the Raiders, even though he won the Super Bowl in Tampa, actually being anything but that.
Yeah, and it's a shame. And then you think and you look at, and I know people have brought it up already, the Carl Nassib situation.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, some of the things that he was saying, it's like, I mean, if you're Carl Nassib, the first, openly gay player in the NFL, like, what are you thinking? Like, how do you look at that guy in the locker room and say, yeah, you may put on the show, you may sit there and say you regret your decision, all that, but in the back of your mind, these are the thoughts that go through this guy's yep. mind, and he's supposed to be your coach, he's supposed to be the guy. So, whether he was going to be fired, I would assume he was going to be fired if he didn't resign. He was obviously saw the writing on the wall and got ahead of this and turned in his resignation. Again, I would like to believe that the Raiders were going to make the decision if Gruden didn't make it himself.
Right.
Based on everything that you've brought up in terms of their history and their you can hate the Raiders all you want, but you cannot deny what they've done to for inclusion in this sport. I mean, it's talk about a team that's lapped every other team. Forget mm-hmm. about the Rooney Rule. Forget about all this. I mean, the Raiders were the team that really made the difference in this league. And just mm-hmm. to have, this be the coach of the Raiders, I mean, again, it was always a joke when he came back and got the job for 10 years. It was, okay, how long is he actually going to last? And there was a myriad of reasons why you would think he wouldn't make it through the 10 years. I don't think any of us had this on our quote-unquote bingo card a few years ago to say, hey, you know, this is what's going to happen, but here we are. And if you were going to ask at the beginning of the season who I thought the first coach to be fired would be, I'd probably put my money on, like, Matt Nagy, maybe Joe Judge. certainly not John Gruden, because I felt like he was almost bulletproof with that contract, so no matter what happened with the team. So, you know, at the end of the day, this happened very quickly, but it just goes to show, like, don't be prejudiced. I mean, it's as simple as that, folks. Like, I mean, I love all the jokes out there, you know, people talking about, like, oh, everyone's going back trying to delete their emails. First of all, you don't delete emails, okay?
Yeah, no.
they're
last forever.
Second, if you feel the need to have to go back and delete emails, well, guess what? You probably deserve to get called out anyways. So, like, look, I mean, the way you act in private, you know, obviously speaks more about your character and who you are as a person. And if your motivation, if your reasonings for, I don't know, what I'm trying to say is, like, if you're hiding things that, you know, people are always like, you know, I've seen a bunch of people tweet out, okay, you better start deleting those. Well, why delete them? It doesn't change who you are. It doesn't change what you said. You know, you're just trying not to get caught. So, like, right. You know what I mean? Like, if you have emails similar to that you've sent on through a workplace email or whatever in the context of which John Gruden sent it, then guess what? You probably deserve to get found out at some point, because you probably still harbor some of those feelings. So, again, it's a messy situation. The Raiders, I think, should come out of this, you know, fairly clean. You know, again, because I don't think this is a John Gruden issue, as far as we know, not a Raiders issue. ESPN, though, they seem to be skirting a little bit, because let's not forget, these quote-unquote emails and these interactions occurred while he was employed by the organization. So pretty wild occurrence yesterday. Made a lot of people kind of not realize what was going on during the football game last night, because it was pretty fun, pretty wild.
Yeah, I mean, the game was outstanding. You saw Lamar Jackson just do incredible things out there and lead his team to victory in overtime. And yet...
Oh, well, it seems like we have lost John, and by losing John, that means my phone died, which was our connection to John. So give us just a minute. We'll get him back here while we try to continue the show here. Obviously, last night, it wasn't just the NFL going on. Obviously, the Ravens and Lamar Jackson really showed up. Personally, I was watching part of the game. I saw that the Colts were up a decent amount, and I was like, okay, you know, maybe I'll tune in later. Kind of forgot. Woke up this morning, had to rewatch all the highlights, because I clearly didn't know anything that was going on, because, well, hey, guess what? I was paying attention to baseball and a lot of the things that were going on in the NFL with John Gruden, as John and I were starting to discuss here. So the biggest thing for the Ravens now, if you look at the landscape of the AFC, they've already beaten the Chiefs. The Chiefs right now are out of the playoff picture. So for them, they may be looking more so at a wild card at this point, because they've lost to the Chargers, they've lost to the Ravens, and they will continue to have to climb out of this hole that they dug themselves in the AFC. And it doesn't get too much easier, save for maybe a matchup with the Washington football team this week. But the Ravens now have kind of the inside track when it comes to, you know, certainly the AFC North. I think they're a better team than Pittsburgh, certainly. They certainly have a better quarterback. I mean, you're going to find a pretty short list of quarterbacks that are better than Lamar Jackson right now. I don't have the stat in front of me, but someone posted this morning that, or posted the total yards for Lamar Jackson, and he's outgaining several teams, not just players, teams in total yards between his passing and running ability. It's pretty wild, and he seems to be gaining more and more of that MVP like form that he had just a couple years ago, where he was really the most dominant player on the field and was named the second unanimous MVP in NFL history. So the AFC seems to be a lot more competitive than we initially anticipated. I think going into the season, the question was, okay, what team can really compete with the Chiefs? Well, the answer is a lot of teams, because the Chiefs aren't what we know them as. They are a team that is not good defensively, and they're not as great offensively. And I think that, you know, some of those struggles can be fixed for sure. 15 games left in the season or whatever it is, or 14, 13 games. You fix those issues, you become a little bit more efficient on offense, and you can help a lot of those issues that you have on defense. However, the problem is already at this point, this early in the season, you're a little too far behind almost for trying to make it up and get that number one seed. Now, remember, there's only one team that gets the bye week this year, and I think that's going to play a big role in how these playoffs shake out, because if Kansas City has to go to Buffalo, or say they have to go to the Ravens, Baltimore, that's not going to be easy. They're going to want that home field advantage. They're going to want that first round bye week if they want to get back to their third Super Bowl. And I don't know if that can necessarily happen. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. The game, like I said, is this going to be Lamar Jackson moving forward? Well, if it is, well, he's going to be right in the thick of the MVP race. So give us just a moment. We're going to go to a quick commercial break. And when we get back, hopefully we'll have John Sapicetti on the line.
On an 0-1 pitch, Hernandez lifts one to left center field. It is pulled in by Meadows. Here comes Santana. The Red Sox onto the championship.
All right, folks, we are we're back. We're back. Sorry about that little mishap. We lost John there for a moment, but it's okay. Play. It's all right. Oh, I guess we're getting to hear it again. There we go. We got to stop that on replay. No, we had a little disconnect issue here with John, but we got John back. John, pulse check. You there? You're still with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good.
I'm here.
Good. I had to carry the show there for a few minutes. It was a
That's
little.
Okay. You're quite capable.
Well, I tried. It was a little nerve wracking. I was talking about the Ravens and kind of, you know, their high, you know, where they stand in the AFC, but look, one of the most impressive things from Lamar Jackson, kind of what I was speaking to, total yards, mm-hmm. More than several teams, which is just absurd. But we'll get back to that. Although, John, I know you said you watch both baseball games. How conflicted would you be if it's the Red Sox and the Giants in the World Series? I know. There's
very easy.
Yeah, Giants over everything, right?
Oh God, absolutely.
Okay, that's what I figured. That's what I figured. But
yeah.
Look, I mean, it's pretty.
And it would be for the best organization of the 21st century, because the Red Sox have four World Series, the Giants have three. So if they meet in the World Series and the Giants win, they'll both have four, and they have the tiebreaker because they would have beaten them head to head. And neither team has lost in the World Series in this century. In fact, they generally just handle the World Series magnificently. Alex Cora now is 15-4 in the postseason.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
That's wild.
That's really good, you know. And I definitely Giants over Red Sox. It would be a blast. I mean, talk about two great organizations, franchises, fan bases. That would be a wonderful World Series. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, it's funny because it's like, look, I'm old enough. You're obviously old enough to remember when.
Obviously.
old enough to remember, you know, the Yankees dominating. Not just the division, but just the AL in general. I mean, it was the Yankees, and it's funny how how much that script has flipped over the last 15 years. It wasn't that long ago. It was, you know, the lovable losers. Oh, well, it may be next year. You know, this year's the year. This is where, you know, some of the Boston media thrived in the, you know, the downtrodden years of the Boston Red Sox. But the reality of it is this team just, obviously very overshadowed by the Patriots' success. But, you know, like you said, they have four World Series. You know, they're four wins away. And look, it's going to be an easy matchup. But, I mean, they just knocked off two of the best teams in the playoffs, in the Yankees and the Rays. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Are you really going to bet against them at this point? I mean, they seem to have a little bit of luck on their side. They have, they're obviously playing to a level that, you know, is warrants going to a World Series. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And perhaps another, and the Red Sox are pretty good at this, unexpected World Series run. It would make three, I think, if they were to make it there. Because you think about 2013, how unexpected that was, you know, with everything that happened. I mean, that whole season, they didn't lose a single series. That's absurd. That's insane, really, if you think about it.
Yeah,
and
they were outstanding.
Yeah, but no one expected that sort of dominance. And no. they just walked to a World Series. That was an example of a team that was from day one the very best team in the league, and just it showed. And in 2018, sort of, I mean, there's higher expectations, obviously, but still, I don't think anyone expected them to make that run. And here we are yet again, a couple years later, that's what it feels like, four wins away from going back to the World Series. So that's pretty exciting if you're a Red Sox fan. And if you're a little tired of Tampa Bay's success, you may have enjoyed this as well. Although, again, the alternative being Boston potentially has more success. So maybe it was a lose-lose situation for a lot of people out there.
Well, you guys still have Tom Brady down there, so he you know, he takes care of a lot of things.
We don't include – look, I am a Tom Brady fan. I am not a Buccaneers fan. Just by virtue of him being on the Buccaneers, I will root for the Buccaneers. That's
why next year I got a funny feeling I might be a Cleveland Browns fan or something like that, wherever my man Aaron Rodgers is playing. But yeah, I mean it was a wonderful game because they got off to this 5-0 lead. And I know we were texting back and forth going, "This is fun," and then all of a sudden it was 5-5. You're like, "This isn't fun anymore." Yeah. This is how the Red Sox play. I mean, they play a lot of crazy games. They're back to back walk offs. The other thing is, really, no one has mentioned this: the fly ball to Austin Meadows. Was he aware that it was the bottom of the ninth inning and there was a runner at third? Because he was so nonchalant setting up for that fly ball. Like, the outfielder has to back up a couple of steps and get some momentum on his throws.
Yeah.
He just was flat-footed, caught it, and just, like, flung it in. And it wasn't that deep a throw. It was probably 250 feet. I mean, if he had backed up and caught it with momentum going forward, he would have made a much better throw. Maybe he would have had a play at the plate. I mean,
he could have just been resigned to the fact that he wasn't going to make the play. I mean, it is what it is. Look, at first I thought the ball was hit a little bit deeper. Regardless, you know, a fly ball is going to score a guy from third base, especially, right. you know, they brought in, what's his face, to run. So,
Santana.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, yeah, that's going to be a tough throw to make. I did think it got hit a little bit further when it fell down. I was like, oh, wow, that could be a play. But
yeah,
the reality of it was, I don't know. You know, obviously, if he was coming from second, that's a whole different story. Or even if he got a great jump off second and was just rounding third, I think you make a, you know, you have a far better chance. But, you know, just tagging from third and, you know, I don't know. Maybe he was just there was no way for him to even take those extra steps to wind up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like maybe it might have not been high enough because it might have just been a routine fly ball, whereas we've seen a lot in the series with these sky high fly balls. And, you know, Hernandez was either smart or fortunate hitting into left field, because if you hit it to Kiermaier, who's just wonderful in center field, my Lord, what a ball player that guy is, or Rosarena in right field, then there would be some play at the plate because those two guys can really throw the ball. Meadows, not so much. But, look, anyway, the Red Sox found a way to win. Give him credit. Eduardo Rodriguez was really good as a starter last night. You know, they came up with the big hits when they had to early, and then they kind of went asleep offensively. But I'm not really a Red Sox fan, but I root for them. It'd be my favorite team in the American League. And I always am bewildered by some of the fan base, some of the media, maybe it's just the people that call talk shows, that there's like so much hatred towards the Red Sox. I think it all goes back to ownership, because they're outsiders, and this is the most parochial place on earth, right? I mean, so John Henry and Tom Warner are considered outsiders, and they are a bit, you know, sanctimonious, or what, pick a word to describe them, or they can be insufferable at times. But since he bought the team, they've won four World Series, as you talked about, and Fenway Park went from being a dump to the biggest tourist attraction in Boston. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, give them credit for some of that stuff, right?
Well, I think also the biggest issue, speaking to that, you know, what you're bringing up, is that the leaders of the media coverage of this team want this team to fail, and are overly negative and condescending to a lot of their readers and a lot of their listeners. And look, I feel comfortable saying
that. Speaking about Dan Shaughnessy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
He's made a lot of money. The curse of the
Bambino. Yeah, well, of course.
That's a great narrative.
And it is a great narrative. But the problem is, you know, at a certain point, that stick just runs dry. Like, people don't get this mistaken with people always wanting to hear great things about your team. No, I think people appreciate honest, realistic criticisms and concerns when discussing, you know, the ebbs and flows, especially of a baseball season, because there's so many. But the predictable, narrative-driven opinion that leans negative and leans towards I'm smarter than you, you listen to me type writing is what I think has soured a lot of people on this team. And unfortunately, look, we're plugged in because we pay attention to this 24/7. The guy who listens to sports talk radio for 45 minutes a day when he gets out of work isn't. So what does he do? Right. He turns his radio on and they hear, oh, well, I'll just keep calling him Don. Dan Shaughnessy. You know, he said this and the fans are this, that. Well, guess what? Dan Shaughnessy, he's been in this industry for a while. I'm going to trust him. And it's a snowball effect. So you do that for so many years. It's the same thing over. It's so exhausting, John. It really is. It's the same thing over and over and over again. You know, how many columns were written a couple months ago about Chaim Bloom and how he should be? And it's like, wait a minute. they just hired this guy who, if you look at the Rays, by all the things, you know, by all accounts, an incredibly run organization to be able to do what they've done, considering their payroll. You're not going to give this guy an opportunity to build this team? I mean, look, I was one of the first people to sit there and be disappointed about the Mookie Betts trade. Not anymore. I mean, why would you complain about that? You know what I'm saying?
Well, it was interesting last night as we were seeing what the Tampa Bay Rays got for Chris Archer, which was Austin Meadows, Tyler Glasnow, and also the young pitcher who pitched game two, Baz, who I think is going to be a really good starter. They got three legitimate players.
Yeah, but they also had a desperate Pittsburgh. Archer. They also had a desperate Pittsburgh team who thought that they were just on the cusp of competing.
Right. Yeah, so they went out and got a legitimate starter. Yeah. The Red Sox kind of muffed up the Mookie Betts trade. And look, I like Alex Verdugo a lot. He's nowhere near the player Mookie Betts is.
No one would say that.
But he's a nice player, though, and he kind of fits in here, right? He and Kiki Hernandez, they bring a really good DNA to the organization because they played for the Dodgers and went to the playoffs every freaking year. So they're considered winners, right? I mean, like, Kiki Hernandez is always in the postseason doing something. They kind of blew it, though, because they should have got an arm out of that deal. But we don't have to relitigate that. They've moved on. I mean, this is what happens. I mean, he wasn't going to sign here. They weren't going to pay him that type of money. So, yeah, it hurts me because he's the best player I've ever seen wear a Red Sox uniform. And I'm 58 years old in terms of all-around ability. I mean, you know, maybe Manny Ramirez was a better hitter or whoever. But all-around, you know, defense, base running, hitting, everything, Mookie Betts is the best player I've ever seen wear a Red Sox uniform. So you want to see him play his entire career with the Red Sox. It just didn't happen. So they tried to get the most they could. They probably should have kept the pitcher that they got in the original deal, Brazdar Gratterall or whatever his name is, because he's a legitimate arm. Like, they need that in the bullpen rather than Connor Wong, who's at best a backup catcher, and indeed Jeter Downs looks like a complete miss. So basically it's Alex Verdugo for Mookie Betts, which is never a good deal. But, you know, here they are. still going to the American League Championship Series.
And look, I mean, that's sometimes moves just had to be made. And that's a move that, you know, obviously I think, you know, when he took the job, Bloom, that is, he knew he had to make that move. That wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
It was so, you know, that's why I don't, you know, I don't, in hindsight, again, you know, a lot of this is in hindsight, because if you go back and you know, look at some of the things I said, I was very disappointed in the move. I thought it was a, you know, I wasn't killing Bloom, but, you know, at the same time, I was disappointed that it got to this point. And I think probably in, you know, thinking back at some of the things I said, I think it was more directed towards ownership than anything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, you know, just based on, you know, what we've seen so far, it certainly seems to be working out. And look, this team, again, expected to do so little. And that's, it kind of goes back to the media coverage in this team on this, because the expectations were so low prior to the season that, like, by the time we got to the end of the season, it was almost disappointing where they finished. And it was like, wait a minute. How do we get from, okay, the expectations are far less than what we actually did, but what we actually did ultimately was disappointing to, you know, this gang of media members that just feels the need to push this negative narrative. But,
and you know who's voiced that quite loudly in the city has been Lou Maloney, who's on your side with this. And I think what Lou did a couple weeks ago, I see where he's at. I don't think the entire sports hub is out to get the Red Sox. I mean, but, you know, it's what you do on talk radio, especially if you're doing 5 hours at night.
Yeah. Well, their business model isn't accuracy. That's the problem. It's not accuracy. It's not facts. It's narrative.
Right.
It's all about narrative. And yes, I understand that. I mean, look, I gotta knock your guy Shannon Sharpe a little bit here, and I'm not gonna spend too much time on it.
I saw that on Twitter.
But like, it's narrative driven conversation has just overtaken the sports world, and it's unfortunate because a lot of these narratives are based on nothing. I mean, they are mm-hmm. rooted in further false narratives. So, you know, I said, you know, I'm going to bring up Shannon Sharpe yesterday. Look, we all get what they do. One guy picks one side, one picks the other. It's for a show. It can be entertaining. But at a certain point, you just got to sit back and realize that some of the things coming out of your mouth are just dumb and hurt this industry and this credibility of what we're trying to accomplish. And that's, you know, provide a reasonable voice for fans out there, because yeah, I think there is value to sports talk. It's just not what it is now. So, you know, Shannon Sharpe will get up there with a straight face, mind you, on national television and give Tom Brady a C+ for his performance, in which he threw over 400 yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, and they just whitewashed the Dolphins. His reasoning was because he was padding his stats. He was padding his stats in a one-score game entering the fourth quarter, in which he got taken out with over 9 minutes left in the entire game. He was padding his stats. Like, come on. Like, that's not even, like, again, in the context of understanding what they're trying to do and what they're accomplishing as a show, it's just idiotic. And it really bugs me.
That's not even worth discussing. You're right. Because, I mean, again, if you're opposite Skip Bayless and the conversation is Tom Brady, unless you want to just sit there and nod at Skip, you have to kind of come up with some crazy stuff, and that certainly
is crazy stuff. Brady may be the
NFC Offensive Player of the Week, and you can't give him a C+, because unless there was just a dearth of scoring this week, the guy put up 45 points in 51 minutes. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's like, you know, it's predictable. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's same with this Boston media stuff. It's like, it's predictable. Like, you know, like, you'll see a link, you'll see a headline, you'll be like, oh, I know who wrote that. You click the link. Bingo, nailed it. Because you know exactly what it is. It's like the whole tomato cans thing with the Patriots every single year. Oh, tomato cans. That's my thing. That's my narrative. So I'm just going to keep pushing it because I'm, you know, cool and edgy. Well, I don't know.
I did research on this, Ian, and I broke down from 2001 on until Brady left. They basically won like 75% of any situation you want to talk about. I mean, I think only twice in the Brady Belichick run did they sweep the division. Like, there was always a tough game in Miami, mm-hmm. or the Jets had some good defenses. And I was just like, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, while they were together, won 77% of their games, whether it was in the regular season, the postseason, against the AFC East, against the NFC West. Like, just pick anything over that period of time. It wasn't like they went 6-0 every year against the AFC East and then, you know, went 5-5 the rest of the way against the rest of the league. I mean, yeah, those teams – and those teams, actually, if you took out the games against the Patriots, were all roughly 500 teams. It's just that the Patriots dominated the division, mm-hmm. kind of like Green Bay's dominated the division,
well,
you know. So,
well, you know, the,
and people
the,
will throw that out there and go, you know, it's the, you know, Aaron Rodgers' division. Well, yeah, he's really good. They're better run than the other organization, so – congratulations.
Well, and look, if you go through and the research has been done, the records have been put out there, you list all the records for the divisions, you know, whether you have the Patriots in it or you remove all the winners of the division, you know, the corresponding mm-hmm. teams to the Patriots, the AFC East is at worst middle of the pack winning. And in a lot yep. of cases, they're right at the very top. So this whole idea that the AFC East was this horrible bottom feeding division is false, and it's provable. I mean, the raw data right there, this isn't subjective. This isn't me saying, oh, no, I actually think they're pretty good. No, I mean, the data says so, but people will still sit there and push this narrative, and it's like, it's mm-hmm. mind-boggling because you know what it is? All they do is focus on the quarterbacks. And well, ignoring the fact that, well, a guy named, you know, Mark Sanchez did technically go to hit two AFC championship games, but yep. what they do is they ignore the defenses. I mean, remember the right. early 2000 Dolphin defenses? Good God, were they good.
Jason Taylor was kryptonite to Tom Brady.
Jason Taylor, Thomas, yeah. I mean, yeah. you just name it down the line. They had an incredible...
One's a Hall of Famer, yeah. one's probably a borderline Hall of Famer, right? And then they had, was it Patrick Surtain?
Patrick Surtain.
The cornerback that was
and they were top 10 defenses every year. And then yeah. you get into the middle part or the later part of the 2000s into the early 2010s, and guess what? The New York Jets had one of the best defenses in the entire league. You know, forget
Absolutely.
About their offense, but yep. like, and then the Buffalo Bills came around. So this whole idea that this AFC East has been this just wash of a division is silly, and it's a false narrative, and it's just things that I hate, John. I know we're kind of getting off on a tangent. We're going to have to wrap it up.
No, here. No, it's just, I mean, there are certain numbers that back up what we're saying. You know,
yeah.
so again, I remember this narrative, I think it was around 2014, then I did it every year. I'm like, the guy wins, the both of them win 77, well, when they're together, 77% of their games. Like, you know, Super Bowls, AFC Championship games, like whatever, Monday night, yeah. Thursday night,
it
Saturday
doesn't matter.
Afternoon. It's just
indoor,
like, it doesn't
outdoor,
matter. Not when it's that. It's,
on
it's,
a chair,
it's the
off
same
a
thing.
Chair.
Yeah. It's not Drew Brees, who, you know, his numbers in the dome are much better than outside of the dome. Like, we've seen that. And Peyton Manning, to a lesser extent, and that's why I always put our two guys up there, because they had to play their careers in inclement weather quite a bit. I mean, mm-hmm. Green
and
Bay
thrived.
And Foxborough aren't exactly the best places to play in terms of weather. And they're both Northern California guys. I don't know how they were able to be so good in inclement weather, other than they're both really good. In fact, the best inclement weather running back ever was O.J. Simpson, who also grew up in the Bay Area. Maybe they just make good athletes in the Bay Area.
Yeah, maybe. But we'll see what happens. We still got a whole long season to go in the NFL.
Yeah.
Obviously, have plenty of time to go in Major League Baseball, and hockey and basketball are just getting started. So we're going to say goodbye for the day. We will be back on Friday to give our picks for this weekend's game. So until then, have a great week, and we will talk to you then.